Welcome to Voices and Views on Great Falls Public Radio, KGPR 89.9. Today on the show, I have the distinct pleasure of speaking with Shane Etzweiler, the president and CEO of the Great Falls Area Chamber of Commerce. Shane, thank you so much for coming on the show.
Hey, Thomas, thanks for the invite. I just, when you invited me to come join and visit with you on Voices and Views, and I thought, man, what a great opportunity and a great service that you guys provide to Great Falls. So thank you. I'm honored to be here and visiting with you today.
Absolutely. So talk about on this show a lot what I term the culture of contempt that I've seen emerging over the last decades here in the United States. And I think a large part of that is we have this confluence of social media and 24-hour news, and it has this tendency to break us into just bromides, right? And not understanding where the people we're interacting with, where our leaders are coming from, what has molded them. So I like to ask our guests, you know, where'd you grow up? Where were you born? And maybe some formative experiences that played a role in developing the values that you hold today.
Yeah, and I'm probably going to give you a long answer, but I'm a native of Montana. I was born in Helena. My dad was a home builder. He was a contractor, construction trades. He was a journeyman, became a master carpenter. I mean, he did everything from building bridges to doing fine cabinetry work. And so born in Helena, and when my younger brother was born as well, too, my dad saw the opportunity to move to Spokane, Washington at a young age. And so moved to Spokane, Washington. He started his own construction company there. And built their home, Spokane Valley. And after that, shortly after that, I was about 5 years old. This would have been the early 70s. My dad and my parents were invited to a Bible study. And so it was there that my folks heard the gospel from the Bible and received Jesus Christ as their Savior. So at a young age, I also accepted the gifts of salvation that way. And so that was, you know, again, early on. So my dad, as a result of that, decided to go into the ministry. So he went to Inland Empire School of the Bible and was then certified to preach the gospel. And after that, the church we were going to was Valley Forth Memorial in Spokane, and they sent us back to Montana. And that's again where my folks, my mom graduated from Helena, my dad from Townsend. So we moved to Great Falls back in the mid-70s, and my dad was a missionary for a couple of years. After that, we moved to Red Lodge for a few months. He took on a church there. And then after that, just a few months, this is when I was a fifth grader, so I was about 10 then, we moved back to Spokane. My folks had bought some property with my dad's dad, so my grandpa, and about 28 acres north of Spokane. So they built their dream home in the late 70s. And so as part of that, and again, just love the construction industry. And my folks, again, that's when interest rates just started going through the roof, 20-21%. And so they needed to sell the home that they had built. And so fortunately they did right before the bank was going to foreclose on it. And we bought another home in the Spokane Valley. And it was there also that my dad was asked to be the senior associate pastor at the church there, the church that had sent us to Montana. So at that time in the late 70s, church was running about 800 people in Sunday school and 2,000 in church. So not a mega church by any means by the definition today, but a large church in Spokane. And so it was growing tremendously. It was at that point I went to a private school for about 2.5 years. So between my 8th, 9th, and half of my 10th grade year. And then it was at that point that my dad felt convicted and on a certain situation within the church. And so he resigned. And so then we moved to Fort Benton, Montana. My dad took on a church there. So I ended up moving back to Montana in Fort Benton, middle of my sophomore year. Graduated from Fort Benton, went to college in Haver, and I've always worked. I've always been involved in some sort of work, whether it was even doing my own snow cone stand in the summer or doing cinnamon sticks and selling them to my classmates, you know, soaking them in that cinnamon oil and selling them to them. So I've always kind of had this entrepreneurial spirit. And again, with my dad being a home builder and whatnot, just you can do things and you can do things on your own. You just got to learn how to do it and what's the process and the steps and to do that. So went to college, and shortly after that, I started on with McDonald's and quickly became a swing manager for them as well, too. And then my senior year, I started taking a lot of classes. I wanted to graduate a quarter early. I was actually behind going into my sophomore, my junior year, and met a friend, Randy Egan, and he was really pushing to finish school early. And I thought, I want to do that too. I want to finish school early. So finish school a quarter early. But my senior had taken a lot of classes and started with Herberger's Department Stores. And that was kind of my start in retail my senior year, and worked for them for 3 months in the men's and the young men's and the boys 8 to 20 department. Working in the receiving room, helping them as well too, throwing around boxes and learning that process. And it was after 3 months they asked me, hey, would you like be interested in being a manager? And I'm like, well, I don't have any other offers right now. It's December of whatever year, late 80s. And so I accepted the position. So I became a manager when I finished school in March. And so that kind of started my retail career. So with Herberger's, I moved around quite a bit, a number of places in Montana. And then left Montana in 1994. I was an assistant manager at Kalispell. Got my own store at the age of 27, one of the youngest store managers with Herberger's, and was moved to Rock Springs, Wyoming. So again, left Montana in 1994, moved to Rock Springs, Wyoming. And that was one of these smaller stores. It was a little bit bigger than the Haver store as far as sales volume. But shortly after that, I was asked to move to Grand Junction, Colorado after a year and a half. And so that store was a higher ranking store. I think at that time it was maybe, oh, I don't know, fifth or sixth in the company. And I was with them for about 3.5 more years and took it to number 3 in the company. I actually took out the store in St. Cloud, which was kind of the mother store, the headquarters of Herberger's at the time. So, but I was very familiar with Montana and obviously the Northwest and Minnesota, and where all the Herberger stores was placed as well. We would do a lot of regional meetings, district meetings, and things like that. So, but I was recruited to sell life insurance and investments with MetLife. So I did that for about 2 years. Then I was recruited to be the business manager at a car dealership in Grand Junction too. And it was a gentleman I had met in Rock Springs, and he and I became good friends. And he moved to Grand Junction, I did too, and so he asked me to be the business manager. So second largest used car dealership in Colorado. We had over 400 cars on our lot, so, and it was without a franchise, so it wasn't, you know, associated with Chevy or Dodge or, you know, any of those. It was just its own independent dealership. So I did that for a while, and then also then was recruited by Cabela's, a manager I had worked with here in Great Falls back in the early 90s. He went to Cabela's and recruited me to Cabela's. So I started with Cabela's when there's only 7 stores. And so I moved to Owatonna, Minnesota, was there for 2 years. Then I was transferred to Wheeling, West Virginia. And so in that 2-year period that I was in Owatonna, I was also asked to go help open stores, go help get them set up, get them ready, be part of the grand opening, you know, work with the crew, be that extra workforce to help with customers and service and things like that. So moved to Wheeling, West Virginia, opened up that store. I was a senior soft lines manager. Shortly after we opened the store, that manager was promoted to regional manager, so I became store manager. And it was shortly after that that the regional manager, now still back in Minnesota, wanted me to come back and open up the Rogers, Minnesota store. So store number 14 in the company at that time. That year we opened up 4 stores. And so I came back and opened up the store in Rogers, Minnesota. So did that for a number of years with Cabela's. Loved that. And like Herberger's, like Cabela's, like what you see in the industry, you know, when they're a privately held company or employee owned, people make their own decisions. They have ownership in the company as well. But then when they go public, that's usually when the culture starts changing and things like that. And I saw that with Herberger's. And with Cabela's, I saw it as well too, but it was a lot more slow because Dick and Jim Cabela, the founders of Cabela's, were still on the board. So they still had a lot of say as far as the culture and things like that. But you could still see it shifting and turning. So after that, I was recruited to Hobby Lobby. And so I went with that. And so I moved to Sioux Falls, South Dakota. Was in that store for 6 months. And then I was asked to run a store in Denver. So I did that. And for a year and a half, I ended up catching a tremendous number of shoplifters. I caught, like, in 1 year, 55 shoplifters. So I hit loss prevention's radar. So they asked me to come to the corporate office and work as a regional investigator for loss prevention. So I had 60 to 70 stores in my region. I started in the Midwest from Minnesota all the way down to the Oklahoma City area. And then as we were continuing to grow with Hobby Lobby, they asked me if I wanted to shift out to the west area, west side of the country. Well, of course, that falls Montana, Washington, Idaho, Wyoming, Colorado, everywhere I'd worked. And so I thought, yeah, I'll take that position. So did that for 2 years with them. And then Herberger's called again and said, hey, we have an opening in Great Falls, Montana. Are you interested in coming back? And I actually told them no. We still had a home in Minnesota, in Big Lake. And we had a home in Oklahoma City as well, too. And I said, said, I like loss prevention. I'm really not interested in going back into the stores. And we also have a home in Minnesota, so it'd be nice to go back there. And they, nope, the only store we have is Great Falls, Montana. So eventually said yes, so I moved back here in December of 12, and we were able to sell our home in Oklahoma City, move my family out here in May of 2013, and we currently live in the Fairfield area. So that's what brought me back to Montana was Herberger's. And with retail, retail is a challenge. It has been since about 2008 and the internet and a number of other dynamics, industry forces that were going on. So at that point, I became good friends with the mall manager, Holiday Village Mall, Devin, and he was taking a position with the Billings Mall. So he and I got to know each other. He suggested I apply for his position, and so I did, and I got that position. So I ran the mall for 2.5 years, and, you know, it's the, kind of the same thing. I'm a big watcher of trends. What's going on? What's happening? What are the trends? And so I was just kind of watching the trends in retail and with the mall, and then the position came open for the chamber. And I thought, wow, my dad was a home builder. I built homes with him. I've worked on a farm. I've worked in a grocery store. I've worked fast food. I've worked in an actual restaurant. I've ran mega big box retail. I've worked in the corporate office. I work for mom and pops. So I thought with my experience, I should maybe apply for the position, and they gave it to me. So like I say, you know, if they hired me for this position, they'll hire anybody to run the chamber. So, but I've just been very blessed. And I think just the opportunities that I've received in my career and some of the blessings that I've received have just been beneficial to where I am in this position and this platform that I have today.
Yeah, I love it, Shane. So when I look at that, the kind of threads that I see running through it are always willing to step up for opportunities, right? And having that willingness to take risks, to take chances, right? To move on to that next thing. And then the other one that I love is when you see it coming full circle from Herberger's and then come back decades later, is that idea that, you know, I would assume you're making an impression on people and that's based in integrity. And I know that is something that is talked about, but, you know, actually living it and showing that, right? If you have a corporation that kept you on the radar for decades, that means that you're something special. So as you go through all of these experiences and varied, what would you say to the young person starting out in business that is entrepreneurial about the values that are going to make them successful?
You know, and I think you said a couple of words, and I want to add on to that. I mean, you mentioned integrity, and that goes back to ethics and business, and really, that's your core values. And to me, that has been so important to me. And you mentioned, you know, what were some key things in your life? You know, my dad making a decision to leave a large church because he felt that there were some things that went against his core beliefs. I mean, that's a pretty tough decision, and that can be a tough decision within a church. And my dad definitely did not want to go out and split the church or anything like that. He just quietly resigned and quietly left. Because, again, he felt that there were things that were going on that were against his core convictions and core beliefs. And so that has always made an impression on me that no matter what's going on, you need to do the right thing. Now, part of that is what is the right thing? And really, instinctively, subconsciously, we know what the right thing is. I mean, and when you start thinking, well, maybe if I do this, your body just, it reacts. You have a physical reaction when you actually know you're doing something wrong and you're trying to convince yourself it's right. And that's where I get the foundation, and that's where my spiritual life comes from. And again, does not mean I'm perfect. By no means am I perfect by any means. And I make a ton of mistakes. But what that just means is that I've just got a certain core value, and that's kind of what gives me the foundation to make decisions on. And so when going back to your questions, there's someone in business and someone in, you know, starting a business or a company or an entrepreneur, I mean, when you take a look at these major companies that have failed, if you go back to it and you really take a look at it, it came back to they started making decisions that really were not good, honest decisions. They weren't decisions of integrity, and they weren't the right decisions for the company. There was either greed involved, or there was, you know, how can we take advantage of the situation, whatever it might be. But when you go back to, we're going to do the right thing, even if it's going to cost us, we know that eventually that will come back and it will pay us back down the road. It might be a short cost now, but when you take a look down the road, you say, but I'm making the right decision because this could be a crucial turning point in any decision that I make hereafter this. And again, when I started with the chamber, there's a lot of questions. People said, oh, you're getting into politics. And I said, no, I'm not. Definitely not interested in getting into politics. I said, I'm in it for business. But there's two ways to take a look at it. And going back to, again, some things that have formulated kind of my thoughts, when you take a look at retail, and I've been with a number of companies, you start making decisions for the short-term benefit of the company and not the long-term health. So when you take a look at Herberger's, and again, I hate to talk bad about them because they provided for me a great lifestyle for my wife, my three girls that I raised as well, too. My wife didn't work, and again, as a store manager, not the retail, there's a lot of money, but there can be good money to be made. And again, it provided the lifestyle that we wanted. We wanted my wife to stay at home, raise our girls, and where I could have a job that paid fairly well, that covered our bills and provided a house and a roof over ourselves. But when you take a look at that, and when you take a look at these companies that have failed, it's because they started to make decisions to grow their sales through bad decisions. They started putting things on sale too much, discounting too much, promoting too much. While you might get a sales increase, are you increasing your gross margin? And so when you take a look at a company like Herberger's that had been around for a long, long time, started in the early 60s, and all of a sudden that company is no longer around. And when you start taking a look around the landscape of other retailers, they're not around, and they're not around, and they're not around. And you take a look at Cabela's, which again was Dick and Jim Cabela founded it, and it's a great story. And just their ideal of being the world's foremost outfitter, well, they went public. And then you start bringing in people that start making decisions because they want to hit their quarterly sales numbers. You're hitting that short-term profit, that short-term gain, to the long-term detriment of the company. And again, unfortunately, Cabela's has now been bought out by Bass Pro. And again, I'm on different forums and I see different things and the culture has changed. And again, I'm not bad-mouthing Bass Pro by any means. I still shop there, I still order from them, and I still really enjoy the outdoors. I love to hunt and fish and recreating the outdoors. But look at what happened to the company. And when you take a look at actually Cabela's and you take a look at Sydney, Nebraska, where Cabela's was headquartered, it destroyed that town. I mean, you've got now a corporate office out of there. You got all the infrastructure. And really, that company made that town. Well, now you got a town that really isn't a whole lot there. And it's very unfortunate to see that as well, too. And again, I'm not, you know, bad-mouthing anybody that made the decisions. You make decisions for different reasons. But when you take a look and you're involved in an organization, whatever it is, if you've also got to weigh the pros and the cons, this decision that I'm making, is it for a short-term benefit but could be to the long-term detriment? Or is it possibly, you know, good short-term and long-term? Or is it maybe a little bit of a sacrifice short-term but long-term? This is going to put us in a better position down the road. And so when people say, oh, you're getting into politics, you're running the chamber, no, I'm in it for business. And so whenever we take a look at an issue regarding the state, the county or the city, whatever it might be, I'm looking down the road and saying, how is this going to be and make an impact in our community down the road? While it might be good now, is it going to hurt us down the road? Then I'm going to be against it. But if it's going to be good down the road, I'm going to be for it. And I'm going to advocate for it.
I love it. So integrity, you know, that's, I always say that's the only thing that nobody can take away from you. You can only give it away. And then keeping in mind that short-term versus long-term and the traps that come with chasing the quick gains, so to speak. And then looking at sustainability, right, is what I'm doing something that can be continued indefinitely, right, or even grow indefinitely. And so that's a great transition. I want to talk quickly about the chamber, kind of what I would say the nuts and bolts. Everyone knows the Chamber of Commerce. It's an institution in every town in America. What in particular in Great Falls kind of differentiates the chamber? What are the main programs, initiatives that you have going on?
You know, and there's a lot of great organizations in Great Falls, and that's what's so great about this community. There are some organizations that are doing some phenomenal things and phenomenal work in our community, but really the chamber, I can boil it down to one thing. We're the champion of business. I mean, when we see businesses and organizations join the chamber and then start to get involved and get engaged, we see them grow. And I mean, it was shortly after I started with the chamber, and I obviously meeting lots of people and a number of folks. But one of the things that we had started with the chamber under Brad Livingston when he was running the chamber for a year was business networking groups. And I remember in particular, and I'm going to mention some names, Amy Dardis and Josh Dardis, who run 406 Marketing Design. I mean, I distinctly remember her testimony, and she told me, she said, Shane, it came to a decision point in Josh and my life, with our company, with our business, that we either need to make the decision that we're going to not continue it anymore, or we're going to make some decisions on how we're going to grow this thing. Because it kind of came to the point where, you know, where's our revenues? Where's our cash flow? We're covering our bills. Are we growing? Are we getting ahead? And she goes, we made the decision. We're going to stick with our business, but we're going to get involved. And we chose the chamber. And we chose the chamber, and we started to get involved. And we went to business networking groups, and we went to your business for breakfast, and your business networking, and your business after hours. And as we got involved, we were exposed. We were exposed to other businesses and business leaders and other young entrepreneurs and other people in the community that had this growth mindset and they wanted to continue to grow their business. She goes, that was a game changer for us. So that's just one example. And I can share you testimony after testimony. And another one would be Melissa Desculias with Desculias Realty Group. Again, she was with a realty company here in Great Falls, very successful, and joined the chamber and joined it individually as a realtor. And again, got involved in a business networking group. In fact, she was running it and continued to grow her business and felt the desire to start her own realty group. And so when you take a look at her and the impact that she's making in Great Falls with her company and the agents that are going there and really the service and the level of service they want to give to their customers and clients, whether you're selling your home or you're buying your home, is just making a tremendous impact. So, I mean, those are just two examples. I could continue to go on and on, but really the chamber is we want to help businesses grow. We want to help you succeed. And we want to take a look at the Great Falls area and the community and saying, what do we need to do with the chamber to make sure that we're growing, that we're thriving, and not just that, but we're flourishing. We are really just hitting on all eight cylinders and really moving our community forward from a business standpoint.
I love the clarity of purpose. There's so much mission creep you see, and it's nice to see, you know, what that's a two-word, essentially, mission. We support business. And then I love the focus that I've seen for a long time now is on making sure there's a value add, that when you become a chamber member, that you have a laser-like focus on ensuring that the members have access to resources, have to groups, to networks that create an ecosystem that is mutually beneficial to all of them. And I've seen that really expand. And it's like you say, there's nothing speaks better than results, that you come in here into the chamber and you get involved. And sure enough, you know, your business thrives. And those are not incidental. That's through the networks and resources you're able to access through the chamber. So I know you do a lot in the community, right, to strengthen the overall business climate. And first, I think we should do kudos that certainly nationally we've been recognized as a town that is good to do business in. And so do you want to talk about some of the accolades we've received?
You know, it's just kind of been incredible. And again, we're not the only organization. There's a number of other ones. The Great Falls Development Authority, you know, United Way is, again, a pillar in the community. And we got the Downtown Great Falls Association and the Great Falls Bid Group. And they're all working so hard. And I think collectively, as we continue to focus on what we can impact and what we can make a difference is, I mean, that's really what our community is about, all these other organizations as well, too, and the great work, phenomenal work that they're doing as well. But yeah, we have received a lot of accolades. I mean, we were one of the best cities to move to post-COVID. I mean, that was about a year ago that came out, or last fall, I can't quite remember. We're one of the best cities to start a business in. And so as far as entrepreneurial, and we're the best state in the country to start a business in. But I think, again, Great Falls in particular, we love to support local. We love to spend local. And we just got an email today. In fact, it hit my junk mail, but the mayor forwarded on to a number of us today. And he's like, wow, again, another accolade. And we were named as the best foodie city in the state. And again, it's by a company, and I haven't done a lot of research. I just got the email. But and what that did is they took a look at the population, and they took a look at how many restaurants, how many specialty food stores, how many food trucks, how many other entities that have to do around food per capita, and we were the best in the state. And so when you take a look at that, again, just another accolade that we got, it just shows you the tremendous opportunity and our community and what we do as far as helping businesses get started and then grow and thrive and then flourish. And we've done so many ribbon cuttings just this past 6 months. I mean, we're used to do, oh, I don't know, maybe one or two a month. I mean, we're doing two or three a week now, it seems like. So we are doing a ton of ribbon cuttings with new businesses, businesses that are expanding, businesses that are relocating. And it just goes back to, again, I think Great Falls is just a little great economic ecosystem for people to come in and start a business, and then not just start a business, they survive. They hit that 3-year mark. They hit that 5-year mark. So not only are we one of the best cities to start a business in, we're one of the best cities to maintain a business, because the fallout rate in 3 years is 50%. At the 5-year, there's another 50% that drop off, and very few make it to the 10-year mark. But we show the support and the resiliency in Great Falls for these small businesses that come in and start.
Absolutely. And I do want to go over, because I think everyone in the community really needs to know the availability of these things. So what kind of resources does the chamber produce that are helpful for people in Great Falls, but also to get out the word about this incredible opportunities that you can find here?
Absolutely. So you can go to our website. It's greatfallschamber.org. And so a lot of times as we receive these different awards or recognitions for being one of the best in the country or one of the best in the state, we put that up on our website because we want people to know that we are one of the best to live in Montana. And again, we have a number of committees. We have about 10 committees roughly underneath the umbrella of the chamber, all the way from ag to business advocacy to our military affairs to the Montana Defense Alliance. We just started a nonprofit alliance as well, which has been a great committee. I think it started in, I think, January of 19, a couple years ago. A couple of gals, Lori Sarek with Family Connections and Jen Butler with Quality Life Concepts, said, boy, if we just had a nonprofit group committee underneath the chamber, and we could meet and we can talk about what do you do and what do we do, and maybe we can bring in speakers to help train nonprofits to run more efficiently and things like that. And then started the Give Great Falls campaign, and so that has grown just incredibly well. We've done it this was our third time we've done it. So we started 2 years ago, and then last year, and then this year, so our third time. And we've seen that thing grow eightfold as far as the community giving back to these nonprofits. And again, it's just the work of a lot of great people that do that. So we offer these committees that people can get involved in, whatever your desire is or your passion is. Those are just a few that I mentioned. We have a few others. Then we also have our business networking group. So we have about 4 or 5 of those that are very active. And we just ask you, when people want to join the chamber and they're thinking, well, I was thinking about joining a business networking group, we just say, join the chamber and go visit them. Visit every single one. We don't want you to pay for that up front. Go visit, see which one you like, where you're a good fit, whether it's the day or the time or the group or whatever it might be. And then when there's one you are ready to join, then it's only $50. And again, the business networking groups are designed to help each other grow their businesses, to give leads and referrals to each other. And you get one lead and you get business from that. Not only does that pay for your $50 business network, but it pays for your chamber membership as well too. So, I mean, those are some of the vehicles that we use for people to get involved with the chamber at a different level. But then, of course, we have our business for breakfast that I mentioned. We have our business after hours. Those are just great networking opportunities. And you don't have to come for the whole time if we're doing a business after hours. I mean, come for 45 minutes. Come on in, meet people, shake hands, pass out your business cards, and just have a good time.
And I do love, it really is about relationships. Life is about relationships. And if you go to these events, you'll find, one, you can tell the people there are friends. It's not a synthetic type atmosphere, right? It feels like you're among friends. And it's a wonderful way where you can get tangible benefits, that it is a place where you're, you know, brainstorming ideas with folks, right, and seeing where there are synergies. But it's a much more than that, I guess I would say. And so I highly encourage folks to get on the website. Can you give our listeners that one more time?
Yeah, you bet. It's greatfallschamber.org. And again, you can just go to Google and just type in Great Falls Chamber, and it'll probably come to the top. We have just seen a tremendous amount of traffic in our website, and we've just added a lot of different components to it as well, too. So greatfallschamber.org, and that'll take you right to our website.
Because I personally have participated in these, and they are a really wonderful way to understand kind of who's who in the city and to make these connections that are not transactional, that are not just about getting the next sale, but something that can be a long-term relationship that, you know, will be someone that you can rely on and partner with for years and decades, right? And I think that that's the real strength of having these long-running, well-established networks that you really only see through the chamber, that it has these folks that have been doing it for decades, mixing with newcomers, and you get that great mix that leads to innovation and growth. So I want to pivot a little bit from that, and we know that Great Falls has grown. The census is out, and
the numbers are in, yeah.
It's a really exciting time to be here, and I want to talk about the Chamber's efforts, because they're really innovative to bring, you know, sort of the best and brightest to Great Falls. So can you tell me a little bit about what's being done there and kind of the talent attraction?
Yeah, absolutely. So a couple of things, and I'm going to go back a little bit. We have our 2021 community guide that we came out with, and we've built that and we've grown that. This is, again, our third time that we put it out. We started in 19. It was about 64 pages, and then in 2020, we went to 84 pages. This year, it's 116 pages, and it's a table coffee table, really, type of publication that we put out. And what we've done is we've taken a lot of each of our industry sectors. So let's just say military. When you turn to the military page, we have infographics on there that talk about the military. How many airmen do we have? And what's the economic impact to our community? When you turn to the agriculture section, it talks about it being our number one industry in Montana at $4.5 billion, our number one industry. And then we show the other top industries. And what are the top crops in central Montana and Montana? And what's the top crops in Cascade County? So we really wanted to make it and market it as a piece to really highlight the best of what's happening in Great Falls and what Great Falls has to offer. You turn to the medical section, which, again, we lead the region in medical, the benefits and Great Falls Clinic, and then we have a number of the dentist's office and doctor's office and chiropractor's office. And again, we're at Great Falls College right now doing the broadcast, and take a look at this new dental school. I mean, the only one in the state, and that's just a phenomenal, again, testament to Great Falls and the opportunities that we have here. So basically, we put together the community guide. We've grown it. We love where it's at. We put all our chamber members in the back end. Normally, we would do a spring membership directory as well, too. We decided this year, let's just make them both. Do the community guide, include all chamber members in it, because we have started to, it's been on our website. When you take a look at community guide, it's a link on there. You can click on that. And so in the past, it used to be a digital PDF, but now it's actually a digital flipbook. So when you flip through it and you have your cursor, and right now I just turned to page 49, and that is KRTV ad, and then it's also the Peak. If your cursor goes over that, you can click on that, and it'll go right to their website. They're our advertiser. Go right to their website. As we have restaurants in here, and we have their website, and of course all the members in the back when we have your website, anybody at any time can put their cursor over that website and go to that business link. So I'm looking at City Brew right now. You hover your cursor, you click on that, it takes you right to City Brew's website. And so again, that was a feature that we added to our community guide. And now what we've been doing is we have been marketing that outside of Great Falls, outside of Montana even. So the Chamber just this year started on a marketing campaign where we present digital ads in certain communities across the country where we're very simple. You hunt and fish here, why not live and work here? Because if anything, COVID has taught us that you can pretty much work anywhere remotely, but now you can decide where you want to live. You don't have to go to work or physically be at work for a lot of the jobs that are out there these days. So you hunt and fish here, why not live and work here? Great schools, great community, Great Falls. And then the other message is real adventure starting Great Falls. And so we got a tagline when we say those, and it puts it's in Great Falls, it's in Great Falls, Great Falls has it, things like that. But let's just say you click on it, and you're a hunter and a fisher. You like to fish, and you've been here once before, or this kind of been on your bucket list. You click on that ad. So then what it does is you use artificial intelligence. So Thomas, it takes a look at your online profile. How do you fit? What are your views? What else do you shop for? You know, and it takes a look at your online profile and your behavior, and then it will take that ad and it will target someone who matches your online profile, and it will start sending that ad to that person. So Gabriel's in the studio with us. I don't know if you've ever mentioned it before, but thanks for being here and helping produce a podcast. But let's say Gabriel fits your profile. Age demographic, you got kids, not kids, you know, whatever it is, it will start sending that ad to him. And so let's say someone else, and let's say, I know you're not married and you don't have kids, but Gabriel does. So then it'll take a look at his online profile and it will find someone similar to him because he clicked on it, you clicked on it, it will start narrowing down where it sends those digital ads to in these select cities that we decided to market in. So now let me just flip it the other way. You've got a mom. And we know that certain schools have been locked down and didn't attend school at all last year. We did in Great Falls. And there's moms now that are taking, I'm tired of this. We're ready to move. My husband's frustrated with his job, the commute, whatever it is. She clicks on the ad. It'll take a look at her online profile and take a look and what's her, again, views, what's her demographics, what's her online behavior patterns, and then we'll start sending those ads to people that match her. So we are getting people, and so actually Holly Kopakin, who's on our board, she's with KRTV, the advertising manager, and that's who we partnered up with this on this. She said, I actually got a phone call from someone who is a reporter and wants to move out of where they are. And she said, wow, what an opportunity. So our ads are working and the campaign has been phenomenal. And we've only been at it for just a little over 3 months now, but already we're seeing great results. So going back to your original question on what are we doing to make an impact in Great Falls to get this population growth? That's a small piece. It started with the community guide. What do we can we do to highlight Great Falls, all the great things about our community, and then let's start marketing it outside of Great Falls.
That is really inspiring to hear. And I, every time when you go through the mechanics of digital advertising, it just blows your mind, right? The what those algorithms can do. And it shows you, you know, you're just reaching the people that kind of want this, right? That this is something that is relevant to them. And the ability to do that on a massive scale, but in micro, you know, getting the perfect person with the perfect message is really terrific. I'm just glad that it's savvy that we're taking advantage of that. So we've got the kind of trying to attract talent. And I think then there's the flip side of that is keeping our homegrown talent and then developing homegrown talent. So I want to talk about the efforts around workforce development.
Yeah, no, thank you. And so that's another initiative that we just started on as well too this year. And we felt that there was a need to really focus on workforce. And when I started with the chamber, and again, coming from retail, coming from the mall, seeing the hiring challenges, seeing what I'll call the job etiquette these days, and it doesn't matter. It's not just high school kids. It's college kids. It's middle-aged people. It's the whole spectrum of age where all of a sudden we've got this gap in, you know what, I can't make it in today. I'm going to call, or I'm going to be late. I need to call, or I'm going to quit. You just don't quit. You submit a resignation. You give 2 weeks' notice. You just don't show up for work, which I saw, and I saw firsthand. It was very frustrating for me and my management staff and my teams. And so when I started with the chamber, I said, you know what, we got to pick a starting point. And it's kind of like, and I use the example or the analogy of when you go on vacation, you know, you get the newspaper and you'd get it every day and you'd have your neighbor pick up the newspaper. Because when you got back, you started the day you left and you tried to read to catch up, but did you ever really catch up? No, you're always trying to get caught up, but every day there's a new newspaper coming in. And eventually, at least with I did this, I'm like, I'm not going to get caught up. I'm going to throw these newspapers out and I'm going to start today and start moving forward. And so my focus has been, let's get involved in the schools because we can start making an impact at the school level with high school students and even going down to middle school and saying, let's start talking about career and career opportunity and whatever that looks like for that particular person, whatever their passion is. But let's start in the schools because no different than starting today's newspaper and reading forward. We have this whole spectrum of age where there's a lack of job etiquette, again, that I would say. But if we can start in the schools and start making an impact there, then we start growing a generation. Again, that's a whole future focus down the road look, that long-term view, while we're trying to make an impact right now. And I've been involved in a lot of career fairs, and I do a lot of things on, you know, tips on how to get the job interview, what your resume should look like, how to conduct yourself in an interview. So we do that part as well. But when we get involved in the schools, we start showing these kids the opportunity and the passion, again, to just have an awesome life and an awesome life ahead of them. And so we have been focused on that. So just recently, we hired Scott Wolf, and Scott Wolf is our workforce and education coalition and development person. And so we're taking a look at what can we do to, again, make an impact with, like you mentioned, homegrown people right here in Great Falls, in the Great Falls area. How can we get them involved in all the opportunities that we have right here? Our export, our number one export is our youth out of Montana and out of Great Falls. but we have so much opportunity right here. And so where can we take a look at companies that have modeled a great program, being involved in the high schools, involved with the youth, and involved in making an impact? How can we model that and take their internship template and say, this is a successful one? Let's duplicate it now. Let's help other companies see the opportunities that we have here. And again, I think the opportunity is just tremendous within our school. So we've been working closely with Tom Moore, with also Great Falls College, MSU, Dr. Wolf in the past, and now Dr. Stephanie Erdman. University of Providence got a great relationship there with Rodney Johansson and Professor Katrina Stark as well. And just what can we do to, again, forge these partnerships, and how can we take a look at the opportunities with our high school students, our middle school students and our college students and university students on internship programs, and how can we start keeping them here? And so again, it's taking a look at those models of success and pulling these templates and what are you doing, and how can we then say and roll that out to other companies saying, look, they're doing it. Let us show you how easy it is too. So one of the measurements is, you know, working with, I'm just going to use, Great Falls Public Schools, working with Mark Yeager and Becky Nelson. How many students do you have involved in internship programs, and how many businesses in the community are involved as well? So let's just say there's 100 students and there's 30 businesses. Well, we want to highlight those businesses. We want to highlight those students. But how can we grow it to 250 students? And how can we grow it to 100 businesses in Great Falls? So again, taking those models of success, we want to help businesses say, hey, internships, that's feeding your pipeline of future workforce for you as well too. And really that's Scott's role, is how can we build these funnels and pipelines of workforce so we can continue to feed our businesses right here in Great Falls from Great Falls educated students who are just phenomenal to begin with.
Absolutely. And I love that it's nimble, that when you get the employer involved, that as trends change and you have all the employers there, they naturally are updating the programs. And so you see this constant innovation, and it's sort of self-sustaining, is that they see results from it and they want to invest more. And it's, again, that the model that you see repeatedly is that we're focusing all of our energy in a certain place, right? I love that it's viewing the whole cycle, starting in middle school, and then we also need to look at our folks that are mid-career, right? That it's not just let's put everything in the bucket of like the 18 to 22,
right?
Is that we've got a whole spectrum of folks that have needs for skill development, but we need to see them as an under-invested in asset. I always say that's the big one you'll see, is that folks, they don't see the opportunity. And so they're not deliberate about targeting things to groups that, if, you know, given kind of a catalyst to get them going, can really achieve great things for the community. We've got a great thing going, I think, of bringing people in and then of developing our own homegrown talent. I want to talk a little bit, we talk about trends. What sectors, where do you see Great Falls as being a hub? I know agriculture, where else might we have a competitive advantage that we could push to really put an effort together as a community to have us become a center for?
Yeah, you know, I think we have tremendous opportunity, you know, everywhere I look. So let's just start with agriculture that you mentioned about. So basically, we ship a lot of raw product out of Great Falls. And so what we need to do, and the Great Falls Development Authority is very focused on this as well too. How can we focus on some agri-manufacturing businesses and bring them to Great Falls? But not only that, let's not just think about that. So let's find some, a seed crushing plant. Why not one of the largest in the area, in the entire region, in the entire Northwest? Let's find a processing facility that we can bring here that would just be phenomenal. But not only that, let's take a look at also the second component then would be a transportation facility. And if we could become a hub, because obviously we're so close to Canada, we're on an interstate, we got a great rail system that comes through here. Why don't we become also a transportation hub? So as we produce and do some agri-manufacturing and value added, so we're not just shipping out raw product. Now we've taken a raw product. Now we've created a end user product that we can sell. So now we've got packaging facilities, we've got the manufacturing facilities, and all of a sudden we've got a huge mega transportation facility as well too. So that's one industry. The other one is, again, is military. I mean, Malmstrom and the Montana Air National Guard, the economic impact that they bring to our community is tremendous. It is phenomenal. Well, why don't we start taking a look at bringing in some companies that would manufacture military components, military gear? I mean, there's things going out to the base often and talking to the guys. Sometimes they design their own clothing and gear for when they're out in the field. Why don't we take a look into what are you doing, and then let's bring a company in here to start manufacturing that so we can get it out to all the armed forces, all the military, where they are as well, too. So I think there's opportunity there. Let's talk about medical. We have benefits. We have Great Falls Clinic. And when my mom was in the hospital a year and a half ago, I saw this company everywhere. They're on the rubber gloves, on it didn't matter. I saw it everywhere. So I started looking. I said, well, this might be a company I might want to buy their stock in. Well, it's a privately held company. It's out of Illinois. And but I saw that. So I started thinking, why don't we take a look at a medical component, medical instrument, again, manufacturing facility right here in Great Falls. We have some tremendous hospitals. We have other smaller hospitals in the High Line in the central Montana area that we can start making these our own components for. And then again, that would create jobs, and they're higher paying jobs, typically those manufacturing jobs. And again, I think there's some opportunity there as well, too. So really, I see those. I see ag. I see the military, and I see the medical as some things that we can take a look at. But again, it can grow from there as well, too. The other component that we have is tourism. We have a river that's just right out our back door that is phenomenal. And a lot of people are not comfortable going on the river, so they aren't sure where to recreate. Where can I paddleboard? Where can I kayak? Oh, there's a dam right there. How fast is it? So the chamber just developed, and we're just coming out with a safe use river map. Where do you go? Where do you put in? And so really it's called Know the Mo Before You Go. It's the Missouri River Safe Use Map, and we just launched it last week talking about that. But that will have it's a map of the river, Great Falls, and then further upstream. And again, where can you put in your kayak? Where are the channels? We have pictures of where some of the hazards are, where some of the sandbars are. We have estimated times. So we've developed this safe use river map because we want people to come here and recreate on the Missouri River. Again, it's an asset that we have that just has not been fully developed. And so with the launch of this safe use river map, Know the Mo Before You Go, we see this as another tool to attract people to Great Falls, to utilize some of the great assets we have. And again, what can we do around this? Well, why doesn't someone come in and start renting kayaks and renting bikes for River's Edge Trail and renting paddle boards and teaching classes and things like that? So we have, again, another industry that can be built off the river that is more tourism focused.
I love it. So yeah, vertically integrate is always great. You know, if we're producing something, why don't we see how we can package it, you know, process it, distribute it? Is it their natural synergies? And I love that we're deliberately targeting these places where we already have a competitive advantage. And then I always say, boy, I've lived a lot of places in the United States. I live on the weekends out on the Rocky Mountain front, and I'm almost skeptical to like mention it because the trails are, it's nice when they're empty, but I do think of like, there's so many people around here, like, where is everyone? That is a big, not just the river, right? I love the Missouri River. I'm out our lakes around here, but boy, is that mountains and the front just a real gem. And I mean, the Highwoods, you know, you've got the sluice boxes. We are really surrounded by some of the most beautiful territory on earth. So I love that we're getting together and deliberately getting that message out to folks. I want to move now out to our state, right? And I want to talk a little bit about, what do you see as the most important things that we can do as Montanans to stimulate our economy, to make us an attractive place, to continue to be attractive to do business in?
You know, I think a couple of things, and I mentioned agriculture being our number one industry, and it is, and it's phenomenal, and it's $4.5 billion. Well, when I heard about Nebraska, and I heard some statistics from them, and I don't know if it was just having to do with cattle or if it was their entire industry, but their ag industry is $21 billion. And so I started thinking, again, where do the farmers ship their cows to finish them off? Typically to the feedlots in Nebraska, Ohio, places like that. So Iowa. So when you take a look at that, again, I think that's where we can take a look at that and say, okay, what are they doing? How come we're 4.5 and they're $21 billion? How do they incrementally, how can we grow our industry, you know, five times? How can we get it to be $10 billion? $15, $20 billion industry. And again, because we are number one in so many things. I mean, you take a look at wheat production, barley production. Cascade County is the number one county in swine and hog production. Did you know that the state is number one in pulse crop production? And that's your chickpeas, your lentils, your dry peas. And again, what did chickpea? That's hummus. So why don't we have a hummus factory here in Great Falls? If we're the number one in the nation in pulse crop production, again, that's that value-added manufacturing that we were just talking about. And so again, where's that opportunity and where do we see those success stories in these other states? Then what can we do to, again, drive that industry to get the most value out of it? And the value out of it doesn't mean that we sell the end product, but get the value out of it to grow our own income, household income, again, our own economic value here in Montana and in the Great Falls area. Again, we're at the bottom of the Golden Triangle. I mean, we should be the hub of manufacturing and transportation of value-added ag. So that's one industry. The other industry that we talked about, you know, before that I didn't mention, what's another industry? Obviously, it's the construction industry and the trades industry. That is phenomenal. When you take a look at Great Falls, and again, I moved here in December of 12, and I thought, you know, the mall was doing good, the downtown, there wasn't a whole lot going on, but the Downtown Association and the Great Falls Bid, Joan Rendine and Kelly Pierce down there, you know, all of a sudden now we're seeing a flip. We're seeing the downtown starting to grow, and you're seeing a lot of life in Great Falls, and now you're seeing the West Bank Landing development. You're seeing new apartments coming in the Talus apartments, you know, on the southeast side, and now they're on the west side and the north side. We're starting to see this huge commercial development, residential development, and ADFs here, and take a look at the Lowenbro guys and what they're doing. There is so much opportunity in the construction trades and in those skilled trades as well. And even you take a look at what we're doing here. I mean, take a look at Gabriel. That takes a talent for him to help be with us, produce this broadcast, edit out all my mistakes and slip-ups and errors. But then you take a look at the television stations and you take a look at the technicians that are needed to do all of that. It's tremendous, the opportunity that we have. And so again, when I take a look at the state, what are we already good at? And then what do we need to take a look at? Where are other states where we can model their success and duplicate it here? And I think, you know, we've got a governor who comes from business right now, Gianforte. And again, I think sometimes when you get someone that has another skill set that they can bring in, all of a sudden it's business. And he is super focused on business. And he is hiring people to focus on bringing in manufacturing jobs that start at 50,000 plus. That right now is above the household median average income. So they're jobs for 50,000, and they are extremely focused on targeting companies that will bring in manufacturing jobs that start pay at 50,000 plus. And so when you start taking a look at that and saying, what do we need to do? And where's the best places where we can start putting those companies and positioning them? You know, even on the High Line in some of those small towns, we need to grow our small towns. Well, what's wrong with a great manufacturing company in Havre? Because we know we're going to get the business in Great Falls or Chester or Shelby or any other surrounding communities. There's the opportunity. The other thing I take a look at as well, too, is we have these communities surrounding Great Falls. Well, man, they can become bedroom communities. And again, those people are going there. They're buying homes there. They're spending money at the local grocery store and eating the local restaurants, but they're coming to Great Falls to do business. They're eating here. They're shopping here as well, too. But I think that's where opportunity is. And I came from Grand Junction, Colorado. Not recently, but I lived there for a while. And I remember when I moved there, and that was in 94, their city population was above 50,000, and the county had just passed 100,000. That's when big box retail and they start getting on the radar of all these businesses and industries coming in. Now the city is around, and again, I might not be right, but 60, 65,000, but the county's now 150,000. So where did the growth happen? In the city? No, the growth happened in the county, and that's what drove the business. So I take a look at these small communities, Belt, Cascade, Alm, Vaughn, Sun River, I mean, you name it, Sims that are in Cascade County. How can we help them grow and bring industry into those places as well, too? And so we can grow our county to a point where we start, again, achieving that great growth. Because businesses will not look here if they don't see population growth. They won't look here if they're not seeing a growing community. So and again, coming from retail, we are a strong retail and service industry community. And so how can we leverage and, again, get that growth? And that's what the Chamber's been focused on, is how can we grow our population so we can start attracting more businesses? We don't want to be a Bozangeles, as they call it now, or a Missoula. We want good, solid, steady growth so we can continue to manage that growth and grow in a strategic way in our community. And so have a lot of discussions with a lot of players at the table, Mayor Kelly, Greg Doyne at the city, Brett Doney at Great Falls Development Authority. Again, there's a lot of people passionate about growing our city and growing it strategically to the long-term benefit of Great Falls.
Yeah, and I love to see that we're focusing on our strengths and we're not trying to be something that we're not. I love, it's the Toyota model, I call it, which is incremental innovation. You're not looking to make that moonshot, which often leads to a boondoggle, right? You look at what you're already doing, you already have a competitive advantage in, and you invest in making it really state-of-the-art, really cutting edge. And I love that approach instead of, you know, trying to kind of put a lot of subsidies and a lot of money into a certain kind of pet industry that really isn't a fit for us, right? Is focusing on our strengths and investing in what we know works.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I take a look at John Faulkner at the airport, and he's involved in a lot of these discussions as well, too. And I mean, you know, we've got the FedEx facility right there at the Great Falls Airport. And again, you talk about the opportunities with transportation. Well, let's take that and leverage that to a greater extent. Why don't we have an Amazon fulfillment center right here as well, too? Because if we're already FedEx and a number of other things, we have that opportunity as well. And I think you've hit it, and we've said it several times, but Thomas, you're right on. What are our strengths? How do we leverage them to a greater degree to, again, drive economic value in Great Falls? And not for Great Falls, but for our residents, for our citizens, increasing our property tax base. So now we can fund a stronger police department. So we can build another fire station where we're seeing growth in our community. So we can continue to have great schools and great educators and great teachers come in here. That's what it's all about. And there's where our opportunity continues to lie. And you said it so well so many times, is take a look at our assets and what can we do to continue to build on those and our strengths.
Absolutely. So we're nearing the end of the hour. I just want to give any of our listeners that have heard this and say, wow, I really want to get involved in this. This is exciting. Do they go to your website, reach out? How can they get involved?
Yeah, a couple of things. And again, I've got a great team, and I need to mention my team. Kelly Tuckerman just does a phenomenal job with membership. And she likes to tell people, when you join the chamber, you get me. You get access to me, and I love to help connect people and meet people. And, you know, we were talking about business after hours. We love to see new people come because we know it can be a little bit anxiety-filled. We love to take you and introduce you to others and make those connections and relationships. So Kelly's done a phenomenal job. We just hired Scott Wolf, Lorene Janes, now is our director of operations. But you can go to the chamber, greatfallschamber.org, or you can give us a phone call. We're 406-761-4434. Again, that's 406-761-4434. And you can ask on how to join the chamber. You can go on our website and join. So we have, just click on membership. We show all the different levels of membership. It's not based on employee count or anything. It's based on what benefits do you want from the chamber. You pick and choose. We just have a smorgasbord, and each level has an incremental value and a tangible value to it. So you pick which level you want at. But we'd love to sit down with you. So even when people join online, we'd like to find out, why did you join? What are your goals? What do you want to accomplish? Here's how the chamber can help. And here's how you can best take advantage of the chamber to your benefit. And so really, that's what we want to do. We want people to take advantage of the chamber so they can grow their business and to their greater benefit.
Absolutely. I love it. Yeah, you guys are, it's a serving the business community with the emphasis on serving. And I want to thank you, Shane, for everything you do for Great Falls and for being on the show today. It's been an absolute pleasure.
Well, thank you, Thomas. And again, just what a great opportunity. And we appreciate KGPR being a chamber member as well, too. And I've worked with Richard Liebert a number of years. He's a great guy, just a strong supporter and proponent of Great Falls as well, too. I see him a lot of the city commission meetings, strongly advocating on a number of things. And so we appreciate your support, because sometimes people, you know, why should I join the chamber? I don't need the chamber. Well, you're right. You might not need the chamber, but by you becoming becoming a chamber member shows your support for the business community, and we can focus on helping smaller businesses that might not have reached the degree of success that you have. And you know what? We try to get out and ask as many people as we can, but you know what? Come and join the chamber, see what we're doing. We're excited. We're excited about the opportunity that we see for Great Falls, and we're going to just be behind every effort that we can to continue to grow it.
I've been joined today by Shane Etzweiler, the president and CEO of the Great Falls Area Chamber of Commerce. Thank you again, Shane, for coming on the show today.
Thomas, thank you. It's been a great opportunity and my pleasure to join you today.